Now, Monitor invites you to listen to Meet the Press, the well-known, prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. And ready for the unrehearsed conference are four of America's top news reporters to talk with Sergio Rojas Santamarina, formerly Cuban ambassador to London. Senor Santamarina was the first ambassador appointed by Castro's Cuban government. He is now active in the movement to overthrow Castro. Now, here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
President Kennedy, in his inaugural address, issued a warning that the Western Hemisphere intends to be the master of its own house. He recognized that the most serious threat from communism in our part of the world is the Fidel Castro government of Cuba. Our guest today is a former Castro supporter and diplomat, Mr. Sergio Rojas Santamarina, who broke away from the Castro regime last June. He was the first ambassador appointed by Castro, and he represented the revolutionary government in Great Britain. He witnessed the inner workings of the communist infiltration, and he is now active in the fight to prevent the spread of communism in Latin America. Mr. Rojas is an economist by profession. He formerly was engaged in business and industrial activities in Cuba and Venezuela. And I will start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Ambassador, since President Kennedy assumed office, Castro has indicated that he might want to improve relations with the United States. Is there any basis on which we can work with Castro again, in your judgment?
In my opinion, the present attitude of Castro of keeping a sort of a cordial attitude toward the United States is another proof of his condition of a tool of the Soviet Union. He's not more doing that following the present Soviet policy of friendliness toward this country. I definitely do not think that neither this country nor the Western world can give chance to Castro. I'm taking the liberty of repeating the words of Mr. Kennedy, that when you ride a tiger, you can end up in the stomach of a tiger, and Castro is definitely a part of the big tiger.
Well, are you saying then that there is no dealing with him under any circumstances, regardless of what he says or even what he does?
I say that Castro is an enemy of our type of society. Castro is the most deadly tool and the most deadly weapon that the Soviet Union and the communist apparatus has in this part of the world. And the only solution with Castro is to wipe him out.
Mr. Ambassador, I know that you are with one of the anti-Castro movements. What do you think would be the effect on the entire anti-Castro movement if the United States in any way at all resumed relationship with Castro again, diplomatic relationship?
I refuse to think about that possibility, because I believe that the President of the United States have very, very clearly expressed in his latest appearance in television in replying to questions by newspapermen that he's not contemplating that possibility.
You admit that Castro has not done so well and that Cuba is in pretty bad shape at the present time.
Economically.
Yes, economically.
Cuba is a mess.
Yes. Well, don't you think that there is a possibility that Castro may have learned that there is no gain to be had from dealing with the communists? They haven't helped him enough, and that he may now find, if he's going to save Cuba at all or save himself, that he has to turn to the United States and that he might be sincere in his dealings with us?
That could be a hypothesis worth considering if Castro were the ruler of Cuba. But the real boss of Cuba is the ambassador Sergei Kudryashev, the Russian ambassador, and the man in controlling all the important posts are members of the Communist Party. And the second man in command is Guevara, a trained Moscow communist agent. So even if Castro, which is absolutely out of the question because Castro is another communist agent, but if Castro wanted to do something of that sort, he would be eliminated in 5 seconds.
You say the Russian ambassador is the head man in Cuba. On what do you base that?
By all means.
On what do you base that?
Anything that happened in Cuba today has to be clear through the Russian embassy. The Russian embassy is the biggest ministry in the country. Any important person in Cuba, any man in any position before doing anything of importance, has to be in very good relationship with the Russian embassy. That man, as you know, is an extraordinarily interesting person. He is a member of the Russian Espionage International Net. He is the man that Gousenko denounced as the chief spy in Canada. And he was expelled from this country, or by a clamor in this country, was requested to leave this country when he was at the United Nations. He is a man with a history as a master spy, and is probably doing that type of job in Cuba.
Mr. Hall.
Mr. Rojas, you said that you thought Guevara was the number two man and the Russian ambassador to the number one. Are you saying that you don't think Castro is the leader in Cuba anymore?
Definitely not. Castro is the tool. Castro is the figurehead. Castro is the parrot of the regime. But he doesn't make the decisions. The decisions are made in Moscow, because Cuba is a stepping stone of communism in Latin America.
Yes, I hear this all the time. I hear it in Havana and I hear it here. But what proof do you have of this?
The proof is that anything of importance that happened in Cuba are in one way or another connecting with the policy which is established by the Soviet Union. Right now, for example, the friendliness toward the United States is because there is a policy of friendliness in the Soviet Union. When Castro came to the General Assembly of the United Nations, he followed through exactly what Mr. Khrushchev told him to do. And anything that is happening in Cuba has a close resemblance with whatever is happening in the world within the communist policies.
You think, Mr. Rojas, that the Red Chinese, the Chinese communists, have any say of what's going on in Cuba today?
I say they do. As a matter of fact, there is a very reliable report that the real rulers of Cuba is a committee composed of five persons, in which there is Guevara, Carlos Rafael Rodriguez, a very prominent communist intellectual, Lázaro Peña, also a communist leader, labor leader, a Chinese, and a Russian. The report is that anything connecting with Cuba, with Latin America, is decided in Moscow, passing to Prague, from Prague to Paris, through the Soviet embassy, from Paris to Mexico, and from Mexico to Havana. And that committee put it in operation in Cuba after consultation with all the prominent communist leaders in the continent.
Mr. Childs.
Mr. Rojas, you held a very important position for Castro for a number of months. Did you have any reason to believe when he took over from Batista that there was this communist influence around him?
I definitely did not, otherwise I wouldn't have accepted that job. I never thought that Castro was a communist. I thought that he was a representative of a new movement, a new nationalist movement in the country that demanded for our country clean politics, honest administration, and the solution of a number of problems that exist. But Castro later on took opportunity of all of that feeling that existed in the country and started turning the position of power into the communist hands, and there it started my disagreement, and because of that, finally, I end up with the government.
Well, now, there have been people, influential people in this country, who blame our State Department and say they should have known that Castro was a communist or communist-controlled. Do you think this is true? Should we have known that Castro was a communist when he came into power?
I wouldn't like to get involved in things that affect the machinery of the United States government, but there isn't doubt that there have been many reports in the past, because when you now look in retrospect, you find that there have been reports by prominent persons about it, and probably other contradictory information sort of weighed more than the information against it. But the fact was that not even this government considered Castro a communist agent at the beginning of his regime.
But you and a number of others were loyal to him at the beginning of his regime, although you abhorred communism. That is,
I definitely was loyal to him at the beginning when I thought that he was a nationalist Cuban leader.
Well, now, do you think that he was captured later by the communists?
That's a highly debatable and highly academic argument. There are people that say that he has been always a communist. There are people that say that he started playing with the communists and he was captured. But whatever he was at the beginning, he was captured or he was a communist before, he is today a communist agent. And we are facing today and tomorrow, not yesterday, the problem.
Mr. Hensley.
Mr. Rojas, you are a prominent exile from Cuba, but there are many, many prominent exiles from Cuba in this country. There are so many movements that it's sometimes difficult to keep track of them. Now, you are all united in your desire to get rid of Castro, but there seems to be no coordination among these groups. What's the trouble? Are these individual groups seeking to run Cuba themselves after Castro was gone, or what is the problem there?
Mr. Hensley, first of all, please let me remind you that all of us have Spanish blood in our system, and maybe by temperament, we do not tend to unite easily. Politically, there are divisions. In objectives, there is complete unity. We are determined and convinced and working toward the elimination of Castro and his regime. Militarily, there is also unity. There is a single military command that takes care of all this military operation. And in action, in Cuba, within Cuba, there is a tremendous cooperation between the different groups.
Well, with reference to the question of temperament, is there any way of guaranteeing that we're not going to succeed another dictatorship there with another dictatorship, as we have in the past, of Batista being succeeded by Castro and so forth?
No, I don't believe so. There isn't any reason to believe that. The fight that exists today, the reason why there are this unity is because there is a tremendous argumentation about political points, but none of those points contemplate the return to a single man rule. We definitely want to reestablish democracy in its purest form.
Well, President Kennedy, during the campaign, specifically on October 15th, said that the rebels, particularly those within Cuba, but those outside, are the real voice of Cuba and should not be constantly handicapped by the Immigration and Justice Department authorities in this country. Now, do you feel that you have been handicapped in your work? Do you think things will be better? What do you think the United States should do to help the Cuban exiles?
Well, no matter what difficulty we could have had because of the legality or the technicality of the laws, I would be very ungrateful if I didn't say that this country has been a heaven for us. This country has once again stand up to the tradition of a representative of the free will. And in the case of Cuba, they have really given us an open arm and an open heart. Specifically, Mr. Kennedy just appointed Governor Ribicoff to study all the problems connected with the refugees. I understand that Mr. Ribicoff will be in Miami sometime today or tomorrow. So that shows that the new administration has a great interest in solving whatever problem exists for the refugees of Cuba.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Ambassador, as I remember it, you were the first ambassador appointed by Castro. When did you first begin to have your doubts about him?
Yes, I was appointed ambassador in Santiago de Cuba, who was the provisional capital of Cuba right after Batista overthrow. And I left for England on February. I came here in April when Castro took his trip to Washington. He was interviewed right in this program. I remember that at that program he talked of freedom of the press, freedom of religion, and he talked about election, although he mentioned 4 years term. After that visit here, I went back to Havana, and I started seeing symptoms that were not pleasing to me. In May 1959, I had to come to Havana for personal reasons in a very short visit, and I talked over intimately this situation with a number of friends of mine who were in very high positions in the government. And we start seeing symptoms. For example, the rebel army was being indoctrinated by well-known communists. Núñez Jiménez, who was a member of the Communist Party, was being appointed into a top position. The agrarian reform law was passed without consulting those affected by the law, and was based on information taken from communist previous experiences.
In other words, in May of 59, you began to have your doubts about it?
Yes, sir. And
well,
in May of 59...
Why then did you stay on until June of, I believe it was June of 1960, before you broke?
At that time, and many times later, it was agreed that those of us that were in positions of power, in position of influence, should stay there as long as possible, because we could really be more useful at that stage of the game. At that moment, Castro has a tremendous influence, a tremendous control over the masses of Cuba. So anybody that stepped out of his government would be destroyed by his propaganda machinery and by himself. So we stay there, we watch him, and we gave him the benefit of the doubt. We thought that maybe he was using all that anti-American campaign and anti-American propaganda and all those things he was doing as a sort of a preparation for a big negotiation later on.
Were you just watching him, or were you conspiring against him? Was this a group that was organized to conspire against him, or were you simply sitting and waiting to see what else he was going to do?
I say that we were organized, preparing for further conspiracy, but at that moment we were watching him, just watching very closely what he did and preparing for future action if it was necessary, as unfortunately it was.
Well, did you accomplish anything at all in that year?
Well, of course, we kept in close contact. We discussed the situation with many influential people in the world, not only in Cuba, but in Europe. We established contact within Castro's apparatus, contact that today are very useful. I want you to know that we are very much informed of what's going on within Cuba. When Castro has one of his meetings, no matter how secret it is, we know about his meeting a day later, sometime a couple of hours later. Whatever he does, we keep track of him.
Mr. Rojas, if you and your associates are successful in getting rid of Castro, is it going to be possible to restore property rights as they were before Castro came in? Or are the economic conditions now so scrambled that nothing could ever be straightened out again?
No, sir. The first thing we will do is to bring back Cuba into the road of Western society based on private property, based on private initiative, based on the right of the people to develop their own life as they wanted to, and based on on what is established by the Constitution of 1940, that very clearly established...
Well, would property that has been seized be restored to the...
By all means, to its proper owners.
Mr. Hall.
Mr. Rojas, are all anti-Castro groups agreed that on the fact of giving back property?
Yes, sir.
Well, where are the differences, then? This interests me. You say that you are coordinated and work together in Havana. The counter-revolutionaries in Havana are very displeased about the people in Miami because they can't get together. Why can't they get together? What are the political reasons that are separate?
Well, could be a great deal of personality fights. A certain person against another person. But I say that the moment that the real important military operation starts, and that the government in arms is established within Cuba, immediately all those differences will disappear. Because whatever government comes will have to be a coalition government, taking in consideration the most important groups.
And you are assuming, Mr. Rojas, that it will have to be a military expedition?
Well, I am assuming that it should be a Cuban affair, an uprising in Cuba, followed through by military attack, according with the decision of military command. I am not a military man.
With the help of the United States?
I say that the United States is part of a community of nations which are represented in an organization called the Organization of American States. And I say that the United States is the leader of the free world. And I say that what Cuba is fighting today is not the fight of Cuba. It's the fight of the free world. Cuba is the battleground, but we are fighting the fight of the United States as much as it is the fight of Cuba.
Mr. Childs.
I'd like to straighten that out if I could, Mr. Rojas. You think that the internal uprising should come first. Is that right?
Yes, I think so.
We've heard a lot of reports about training of Cuban exiles in American centers and in Guatemalan centers for an invasion. Do you think an invasion that was mounted, say, within the next 6 weeks or 2 months could succeed?
I am not a military man, Mr. Childs.
But this depends on the condition within Cuba. Do you think Cuba is right?
I can tell you that Castro's machinery is extraordinarily infiltrated. I can assure you that men that are close to Castro today, that goes around with him, goes to have luncheon with him maybe right today, are conspiring against him.
Well, then we're also told, reports from Cuba and from outside Cuba, that he is consolidating his power, and that if the whole effort is postponed for, say, 3 months, it will be impossible to overthrow Castro.
That I agree with you. Those men that are working actively in the underground in Cuba require that something happen because they could not hold it any longer for too long a time. Terror is a terrible thing. You see Castro, he's not forgiving anybody. He shoot anybody that he caught in the act of doing anything against his regime. Right now, there are 6 American boys that are facing the death penalty, and unless some order come from Moscow that in order to please the new administration here, he shouldn't do it. He's going to shoot at them maybe tomorrow, the after tomorrow.
Now, is this underground getting enough help from sources in the United States?
I don't think so. The underground is getting helping for sources in the free world and for many places in the world.
Enough help, though, I think.
For the time being, yes.
Gentlemen, we have about 3 minutes and a half. Mr. Hensley.
Mr. Rojas, the Soviet Union and Mr. Khrushchev have a beachhead, which I assume they believe is valuable in Cuba. When things go even worse for Castro, and he is faced with overthrow, do you think that he can expect any real help from the Soviet Union?
That's a very interesting question. I will give you 3 or 4 facts that show to the contrary. In July 1960, when Castro talked about invasion, Mr. Khrushchev from Moscow said that in case of invasion to Cuba, he would use rockets from the Soviet Union in favor of Cuba and against the United States. In September or October, Mr. Frankie, the editor of the newspaper Revolución, which is the official paper of Cuba, visited Khrushchev in Moscow, and then Mr. Khrushchev said that the help would be symbolic. In January, Castro said in a speech, with rocket or without rocket, we will win. That shows that they are not very sure that they are going to get that support. Another point, very interesting. Starting in February, all the premier, the prime ministers of the different communist countries in Eastern Europe, starting with the prime minister of Eastern Germany, Ulbricht, was coming into Cuba, to be followed by Gomulka, to be followed by Kadar, to be followed by the prime minister of Bulgaria, and so on and so forth. All those visits has been canceled. That is only indications how the Soviet Union feels about the whole situation.
You think that they're getting ready to let Castro go down the drain?
I am convinced of that. And I have information, inside information, that the communists are very worried, because at the end, they have been so much discredited in Cuba that they are going to lose more than they win. And another thing, Cuba, when we liberate Cuba from communism, will be the first historical precedent of a government that has been liberalized from communism in the world.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Ambassador, I don't quite understand just how this liberation is going to come. Do you think that the Cuban exiles and the Cubans inside Cuba now have the strength necessary to get rid of Castro?
If we get the support, physical, political, moral, and financial, required for that, and I have great hopes that we are getting it and we will get even more, I say to you that the Cubans will overthrow Castro.
Now, it took you almost 7.5 years to get rid of Batista, and he wasn't nearly as strongly entrenched in many ways as Castro seems to be. Castro is everything in his power now.
Batista was a minor Latin American affair. He was a corrupted dictator. Castro is an international issue. Castro is communisting against the free world. So what the forces behind us are quite different than the forces behind the anti-Batista forces.
Mr. Hall.
Mr. Rojas, as a former ambassador, do you have any evidence that the Russians or the Chinese are using Cuban diplomatic passports around the world?
Oh, yes, sir. At the Cuban embassy in Bern, up to June 1960, in which friend of mine and a colleague, Dr. Salazar, was ambassador there. There were more than 1,000 visas issued through that embassy by instruction of the Cuban Minister of Foreign Affairs. We have information that from June until now, more than 5,000 more have been issued for Chinese, Poles, Czechoslovaks, Russians, etc., etc. By the way, the man that is in charge of the affair in Bern now is the son of General Bayo that has been mentioned in connection with this Portuguese ship. He's a well-known communist agent and is being put there to manipulate visas and manipulation of funds that have been taken out of Cuba.
Mr. Childs.
You spoke about property being restored to all American owners. Will the new government of Cuba be a capitalistic government, Mr. Rojas?
The new government of Cuba will be a capitalistic nation as far as it is within what is established in the Constitution of 1940.
Mr. Hensley.
Mr. Rojas, you spoke of the military coordination. Where is this coordination? In Florida, or Havana, or Guatemala, or Venezuela, where you're going?
I'm sorry, sir. That is a question I cannot answer.
Mr. Childs?
Well, I wondered about this, the distribution of the redistribution of the property. The land has been given to the peasants, formerly owned by Americans. Can this be restored to Americans?
Let's not say Americans, sir. Let's say to its rightful owner.
Done all on that question are going to be able to do. I'm sorry, but I see that our time is up.
And our thanks to Senor Santa Marina and the members of the panel, Wilson Hall of NBC News, Marcus Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Stuart Hensley of UPI, and Mr. Lawrence Bivak. Meet the Press, which is celebrating its 16th anniversary on the air, is produced by Lawrence Bivak. With January almost over, here's an extremely important message for non-citizens. If you are not a citizen of this country, you must report your address to the United States Immigration Service during January. That means tomorrow or Tuesday at the latest. You must file this report each January, whether or not your permanent address has been changed, and you must file it as long as you remain in the United States or until you become naturalized. You can file the address report at the nearest post office or Immigration Service office. Remember, parents or guardians must file the report for children under 14 who are not citizens. And one last word. You are liable to serious penalties for failure to comply with the address report law. So report your address tomorrow. Monitor, were you...